Hey, thanks for dropping by. Come on in.
Time to retire to the drawing room.
Oh, all this cross-cultural living that we do in Australia, it's just exhausting. It's terribly exhausting and impossible to deal with, unless you bring sport into the equation. This is the thesis that I'm going to test in the drawing room today. A couple of artists who have tried to traverse this in one way or another, perhaps even unintentionally at times. David Newell Vincent is a former child soldier who's taking part in a very special Melbourne Festival dance theatre show, which is called Team of Life, has all sorts of sporting incorporations. And he joins me in the drawing room along with screenwriter Claire Atkins, whose experience of living in Arnhem Land inspired a book, which is called Nona and Me. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let me begin with a question that I, certainly David, in your case, I know you and I both hate. Claire, I don't know if you hate this. You can tell us. Where are you from?
I'm from South Sudan originally, yeah. But I guess I can say now I'm from Australia, maybe. Melbourne, Carlton.
What's the problem with the question?
Straight away, you sort of put me to a position where that I don't belong, I'm different. I don't know. That's how I feel sometimes when someone sees me and say, where are you from? Well, if I say I'm come from Carlton, is that a good answer enough for you? I want to be able to say, well, I'm from Carlton, you know.
Have you heard Matt O'Kine, who's an Australian comedian? He hosts Breakfast on Triple J. He has a, I think, half Ghanaian background or something like that. He does a bit about this. And when you get asked where you're from and he gives an answer and then no one's ever satisfied. And he says, oh, what you mean to ask is, why are you black?
That's it.
That's kind of what you're talking about,
isn't it? That's it, yeah.
How do you feel about the question, Claire?
I suppose for me, I'm half Vietnamese. My dad's Vietnamese. So I know that whenever anybody's asking me, where are you from, they're not actually asking. I'm born in Sydney. Right. So I am Australian, but I know that they're trying to find out, you know, why you're a little bit brown.
Right. So when you say from Sydney, you're from Sydney, what happens?
I was living in Sydney until 2012, yep. Which is when I moved to Arnhem Land, to a remote Aboriginal community called Yirrkala, which is just 20 minutes outside of the mining town of Gove or Nhulunbuy. So, where am I from? I'm from Sydney, but I am a little bit brown or yellow.
That's the best way to answer that question.
Yeah.
Okay, how do you end up in Arnhem Land?
I met a fantastic young lady in 2007. I was working for the government for a very short amount of time because government bureaucracy was not for me, only lasted 8 months. And I met her and she invited me to go up to Arnhem Land to volunteer at the Garma Festival, which is a big cultural festival. So I did that 2 years in a row. I was adopted into her family. And after that, I knew that I wanted to go up and spend more time there. So I talked my husband into it. He's a teacher. So that was luckily a transferable skill. And a few years later, we moved up there with our two little kids. And I had another baby while we were up there. So it's been a big family experience.
Who now, when they are asked, yeah, where they're from, will presumably have to say Arnhem Land.
Yeah, well, the two bigger ones were born in Sydney, but the youngest was born up there. And according to belief up there, if you're born up there, a bit of your spirit always stays there in the land. So she's a Arnhem Land baby, yep.
So when you say you're adopted,
yes,
what does that mean?
It means different things to different people, which is something that the book explores a little bit. But to me, it means that I have a strong link to that family. To other people, they might live exactly as if it's your real family. And other people may dismiss it as like, oh, you know, it's just somebody who wants to take my money or, you know, like, you know, hi, you're my sister, you know, give me some money for a beer or whatever. So it can range, you know, there's the whole gamut of meanings to different people, depending on how you interpret that adoption.
Does it make you all your new person?
No, not definitely not. Just, you know, with extended Yolngu family. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit confusing.
Yeah, well, it's not so much confusing, except I'm just trying to figure out how you go about categorising that. And so much of everything we've spoken about so far is really categorisation, isn't it? When we ask where you're from, that's what we're asking, how do I categorise you?
Yeah.
What culture do I attach you to? Not what you attach yourself to, but what do I attach you to? How do I make sense of all of that? And as more and more people have backgrounds and life experiences like you guys, complicating it for everybody.
Yeah.
It becomes harder and harder to answer these questions.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I was trying to explore in the book as well, is that the main character, Rosie, is a 15-year-old white girl. She's Anglo, but she has these family ties to her Yolngu family, but it's actually something that she can deny, whereas I can't deny that I'm a bit brown, or David can't deny that he's black. Mm. Then, you know, Rosie has the choice. She can accept, you know, and say, this is who I am and this is part of me, or she can say, it's not. And that's where it gets tricky, I think, in Australian society, because, you know, how much of it do you own and how much of it do you not? And there's, you know, the next generation is getting mixed and more and more mixed up, and, you know, then it becomes a question of what's you, what defines you.
It comes a bit tricky. Walid, if I say, for me, I will always say I'm a refugee. I'm comfortable with that. But I haven't.
Always.
I have. Well, when I first resettled here, that was 10 years ago, I felt, well, this is my home now. This is my new country. But then all of a sudden, you know, going through daily life, you kind of encounter stuff that makes you feel always different. So I accepted that. But what I wouldn't possibly accept is my daughter. She's 5 years now. And yesterday, I'll tell you what she did. We were watching the news, and all of a sudden, there's this old wars going on. I was like, oh, that's happening over there, but not in our country. And I kind of stopped and said, where's your country? And say, here. So I was like, yeah, that's really good.
That's what you wanted to hear.
That's what I want to hear. But as she grows up, she's dark, you know, she's black, and people will be asking, where are you from? She will go, oh, I'm Australian, because she's born at Melbourne Royal Women Hospital.
Right.
And she will say, I'm Australian. And then people will look at her again and say, originally, where are you from?
Yeah.
Because that's always that what follows. And I just don't know what she will say then.
Mm. My dad always used to ask me that when I was growing up, actually. He always used to say, are you Australian or are you Vietnamese? You know, which one comes first?
Well, what did he want?
I think he just wanted to remind me that I am half Vietnamese and that I do have that culture in me, you know, because he's not a refugee. He came over as a student. Some of my other Vietnamese family did come as refugees. And I think he just wanted me to remember that that's part of me, you know, that you are Australian, but he thinks of himself as 100% Vietnamese. So it's drawing that, where's your identity from? And
so, as social beings, we're always looking for identity markers in other people. And it might be stuff they believe in or say or things like that, but isn't it interesting that it's the physical, the appearance side of it, but also sound, so accent, these sorts of things. So your daughter, David.
Yes.
Born here, 5, I presume has an Australian accent.
She does. I locked her in a room and she speaks, you won't know whether she...
You have no, yeah, right.
Yes.
So how do you think people then apprehend her? When they encounter her and they see she's black, so clearly there is the where are you from question.
Yeah.
But the minute she starts talking, that question is answered in a particular way.
Yeah.
Does it get rid of the question?
Somehow it does. To me, yeah, it does. It does get rid of the question.
Well, but to you, maybe.
Yeah, that's to me. But
you're not asking where you're from.
Yes, I'm not. But I just don't know really, to be honest, what people really want. Like, I get confused over the years now when someone says, where are you from? What do you want to hear? You know, do you just want to hear me saying, oh, well, I'm from Africa, South Sudan, for instance, or I'm Australian, you know, or I say I'm a South Sudanese Australian. You know, that's how some of us tend to go with nowadays, especially when we visit home. And the same thing happens when we go home, basically, when I say home. Mm. When I return to South Sudan, people will always refer to me, oh, he's Australian, you know. So here I am in my own sort of birth country. I'm being told, oh, you're Australian. When I come here and I know this is home as well, then people referring to me or asking me, where are you from? So
you're either always at home or never at home,
depending how you look at it, yes.
Yeah. Is that what it's like for you, Claire, straddling this sort of Sydney, Arnhem Land thing? You can throw in the Vietnamese thing if you like.
Yeah. I feel at home in all the different locations, but I do think of myself as a Sydney sider at heart, to be honest.
Yeah, right.
So it was interesting actually going to Arnhem Land, because up there you're categorised as Yolngu, which is Aboriginal from that part of Arnhem Land, or Ngapaki, which means non-Aboriginal. So that's not specific to culture. You know, it's all one big group. You're non-Aboriginal. And one of the uni tutors up there that I was working with for a while, she said that that was actually a really interesting discussion that she had with some of the women studying education, that Ngapaki can be broken down into lots of different groups. You know, it's not just Ngapaki. It's, you know, this one might be Vietnamese and this one might be Anglo and this one might be from Ireland, and they're actually, you know, all separate cultures. So that was just another way of defining culture up there, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, well, it's us and them. This is the way that we, as human beings, categorise the world, isn't it?
That's right.
But our group, and then there's not our group.
Yeah, but I guess it's more honest, you know, because maybe that's how people think in other cities as well, but then they don't say it like that. Instead, they say, where are you from? You know, instead.
Now, when they ask that question, just before we leave this on and actually talk about your project, when they ask that question, there's an interesting thing going on here because, David, you hate being asked that question because of what's implied in it. But at the same time, people might just genuinely want to get some bio data from you. They just actually want to know more about you or something like that. So you've got the platform here. What's your advice to someone who's going to ask that question? Their first question, what should the first question be?
Look, it's... culturally, it's an appropriate question to ask because you want to establish who you are and whoever you meet. So even in my own community, someone will ask you, where are you from? Then I go on the line of my tribal line. And so it's not really very strange, that question. But I guess when I automatically look different and in a society like this, and when someone asks you that questions, then ideally they are not asking for my tribal line identity. They're basically asking, where am I geographically from? And that's what I see people are interested in, and so I automatically go, oh, I'm from South Sudan, but lived here now.
Yeah, I think it definitely depends why they're asking the question as to how you feel about it, because I know I actually quite like that question a lot of the time because nobody can tell where I'm from, and mostly people ask me that question because they think that I'm from where they're from. So they say, oh, where are you from? You're from the Andes. You're from my village in the Andes. I say, no, I hate to break it to you, but I'm not. Or, oh, you're Turkish. You know, where are you from? People can't pick it. I could be from South America. I've had people think I'm from Kazakhstan and, like, all kinds of places, and it's actually really uniting, like, because they're asking me because they think that we're the same.
You sense when they ask that question they're trying to create a connection with you rather than categorise you in some other way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's the voice of Claire Atkins. She's a screenwriter and the author of a book called Nonna and Me. And David Newell Vincent is Victoria's human rights ambassador, incidentally, but more relevantly for the purposes of tonight's drawing room. He is taking part in a Melbourne Festival dance theatre show, which is called Team of Life. And I mentioned sport at the beginning, David, and this is very central to all of this. In fact, looking at the tiny little peek that you get online, the little video, the first thing I saw was a soccer ball, and I thought, well, this is a show I can get into. How do you approach responding to this difficulty that we've been discussing this way, through dance and sport and theatre and somehow making them meet?
When I was first approached about the director telling us, like, we can create something out of this, and somehow I basically shared my experience of sports, what sport that I know, and that is soccer. Well, we used to call it football until I came here. When I say football, then I don't know what
that means.
That means anymore, so I kind of chose now to say soccer. So it's about how those, like, most of the refugees who come from my background, we come here, we know soccer. And when you come here, then you have the AFL, Aussie rules. And
or the NRL, if you're in the
Northern State. NRL, yeah. Yes, that's right. And where those meet, it's just kind of really... But the spirit of sports, that's the sort of the part of it, that it's about bringing people together, it's about people interacting, it's about people enjoying the game. That always, it never changed. That is the one thing that I found was really good. Doesn't matter how you call it, but at the end, it never changed. And that's what we want to explore. That culture of sports and how it brings people together.
Why is sport so important in that way? What does sport have that other things don't?
Sport is literally wherever you go, anywhere in the world. I think with any type of sport, you can encounter or meet different sports, but you can actually just fit in because in the name of the sport, you can try to play it. And so in a way, in Australia, sport is big. It's one thing that brings people together. I don't know what event in Australia that brings masses of people together. Mm. Look at the past grand finals, you know, whether people who are watching at MCG or people congregating around televisions or whatever in the park, it's one thing that brings people together. Well, it divides people in a way that people who barrack for different team, but in a way,
no, but there's a solidarity.
There's a spirit of it.
Yeah.
That's what
everyone hates Manly supporters. But then when you get people who hate the NRL in the same room, then all of the NRL fans become one. Yeah, there's a certain respect that happens between that. So what you're telling me is that when you were approached about a dance theatre piece that involved sporting elements, all you heard is sport. I mean,
yeah, that's it. The sport part of it. Yeah, let's do it. And we are trying to explore actually. Because we have four South Sudanese young men in the show, a young man and a woman in the show, and basically we're trying to put the two together, soccer and AFL. And we kind of go a little bit...
The old game and the new game.
Yeah. And we go a little bit in terms of rules and how it's being played. And it's quite interesting to explore that. And for us, or for me as a refugee in this country, just kind of pushes me to understand the culture. When I talk of the culture, Australian culture, you can't go past sports as well.
Right. So is Aussie rules then a metaphor for integration within or into Australian society?
Is that
the way you understand it?
That's the way I understand it, because when I was lucky, I arrived in August in 2004, and then I think a few weeks later we had a grand final. And to me, what was thrown, like the first thing I learned was, do you want to watch AFL? Do you want to watch?
You know, which team do you barrack for?
Do you want to barrack for?
And so, you better have an answer.
You better have an answer. Yeah. So for me, it sort of jumped out immediately and said, all right, we can actually explore this and try to do something.
Mm. Claire, a novel. You're a screenwriter. You've done that.
Mm-hmm.
What made you think that a novel was the appropriate response to this sort of experience you are having of being accepted within a culture but not necessarily being of it?
Well, firstly, there's no TV departments up in Arnhem Land, so that kind of ruled that one out. But I did want to talk to a young adult audience in particular, because I think that living in an Aboriginal community is an experience that not many people at all will ever have. But if a young person can think about that as an option, that's something maybe that they'd like to do, or just even become aware of what it might be like to grow up in an Aboriginal community, I just thought that was opening that door at that point of time in their lives. You know, I just wanted to speak to that particular audience.
Mm. It's a brilliant premise, though, the idea of that main character who doesn't need to identify with being Indigenous because they don't look Indigenous. Mm-hmm. But was this something you were... because that's not your situation, although you don't look Indigenous.
No, but I have been mistaken for Indigenous along with everything else. Some ladies from Broome, because there's Asian influence and Asian Aboriginal mixture up there. So
a lot of people came from Indonesia and intermarriage and all sorts of stuff.
Yep, and boat people arriving who stayed there. And so I have had people ask me, are you from Broome? You know, and even Atkins, I think there's some Aboriginal Atkinses walking around. So yeah.
So what was it then that made you think that this is the vehicle, like not the novel itself, but this character, that this is the most powerful way to explore a relationship with Indigenous Australia?
I guess I was interested in the idea of denial, and I think that even though it is about Aboriginal, non-Aboriginal relations, you know, other people could relate to it. You know, like as a teenager, I had Asian friends who went the blue contacts and dyed their hair blonde, and I guess it's just about owning your culture and thinking about where you fit in society, being true to yourself. So I guess it was all those themes, but it's placed in an Aboriginal, non-Aboriginal context.
Yeah, and then the novel, of course, raises its own difficulties. You need story arcs, and it's not just a bunch of themes. So how much did you have to draw on really what you were doing in your own life?
A lot. Definitely a lot of it came from experience, and I interviewed a lot of people who had lived there, grown up there, and fed their true life stories into the novel as well. Mm. And I also worked really closely with a Yolngu lady and teacher, a fantastic woman called Merkiwoi Gunambar Stubbs, who worked as a cultural advisor, so she could tell me about that Yolngu side of life and say, that's not accurate, or, you know, you should portray it like this. So that was a really great cross-cultural process.
You sit there going, but I thought I was adopted. I thought I knew this stuff.
Well, actually, I was saying, is this realistic? Like, I really had to question my own assumptions, you know, because I was saying, look, you know, this character, this Aboriginal character, she wants to be a nurse. Is this accurate? Like, am I putting my Western assumptions that she should have some aspiration onto this character? Maybe she's happy to stay in the community and wants to be a mum, you know? Am I putting my own Western assumptions onto this character? And it was great because Meriki had actually become a nurse at the age of 18. So all these weird kind of coincidences where she's like, well, I think it's realistic because I did that.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I'm like, okay,
not
great.
In a position to tell you otherwise. Yeah, exactly right. Well, in some ways the assumptions brings us back to where we started, which is the assumptions that are embedded in that question of where you're from.
Yeah.
Which is really, I suppose, what the objection or love of that question is all about. The book Nona and Me is published through Black Ink Books. It's out now. Claire Atkins is the author. And Team of Life, this dance, theatre, sports extravaganza that David Newell Vincent is involved in, is running from the 16th of October through to the 20th at the Malthouse Merlin Theatre. This is part of the Melbourne Festival. Claire Atkins and David Newell Vincent, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
That's it from me for the day. That's it for the program and for the Drawing Room. 6 o'clock tomorrow, we shall reconvene. Tomorrow, very exciting day, because in the Drawing Room tomorrow night, the one and only John Cleese will be joining us, at least if the telephone works properly. That's right, it'll be a phone in the Drawing Room. Ah, scandalous. But when it's John Cleese, I suppose you make exceptions. So make sure you stay tuned for that. 6 o'clock tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye.